Right now, there's an automated, basically a 9-to-5 criminal enterprise operating out of Moscow. And they treat your stolen passwords like a raw commodity on an assembly line.
Yeah, and they aren't just hoarding this data for fun either.
No, exactly. They are funneling the profits straight into a $31 billion underground marketplace, one that sells, everything from software exploits to physical torture devices.
It completely shatters the old stereotype of a lone hacker in a basement. What we're really looking at today is a ruthlessly efficient, heavily layered global economy.
Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we have a stack of three recent intelligence reports, all released between June 23rd and 24th, 2026.
And together, they map out the entire modern supply chain of a cyber attack.
Right. We're going to trace the life cycle of a breach from the very first stolen password to the exploitation of a trusted corporate server, all the way to the massive international money laundering cartels that finance the whole operation.
Which is vital for anyone defending a network. Because, when you realize that these attackers operate like a highly optimized logistics company,
You stop looking for magic bullets.
exactly, you start looking for the weak links in their supply chain.
So let's start at the very bottom of that supply chain, the resource extractors. Our first intelligence report details a massive ongoing operation dubbed Fortibleed.
Fortibleed,
Yeah.
right.
This is run by a Russian-speaking initial access broker. And since February 2026, they have relentlessly targeted over 430,000 FortiGate firewalls around the world.
And the footprint there is very deliberate. FortiGate firewalls are, they're the perimeter defense of choice for small and medium businesses.
Right, organizations with fewer than 200 employees.
Yeah. The attackers know that these businesses often have, limited IT budgets. They are way less likely to have a dedicated security team monitoring every single alert.
The geographic and industry targeting is razor sharp, too. I mean, they are heavily focused on the United States and India.
Hunting IT services companies specifically.
Right, which is wild. Why target the IT guys?
Well, it's a classic force multiplier strategy. If an attacker breaches a dental office, they get one dental office.
Sure.
But if they compromise the IT managed service provider that supports 50 dental offices,
Oh, wow.
yeah, they suddenly have trusted administrative access into all 50 environments. They are breaching the providers to turn them into distribution hubs for future attacks.
God, that's brutal. And the sheer volume of data they're pulling out of these firewalls is just difficult to wrap your head around.
The numbers are staggering.
Between May 31st and June 15th alone, these attackers launched over 600 separate credential harvesting pipelines. That short window yielded over 110 million credentials.
Over 100 million in
Yeah.
2 weeks.
Yeah. The report breaks it down. 14 million Radius credentials, nearly a million NTLM hashes, and 89 million MySQL database tokens.
We should probably translate those acronyms for everyone because the danger is really in what those specific credentials actually do.
Right, they aren't just getting website logins here.
No. An NTLM hash, for instance, is essentially the scrambled language that Windows uses to prove your identity on a corporate network. It's your digital ID badge.
Okay.
If an attacker captures that hash, they often don't even need to crack it to find out your typed password.
Wait, really?
Yeah. They can just present the scrambled hash to the network, and the network just assumes they are you. They essentially own your Windows identity.
That makes the method of theft incredibly important.
Okay.
Because they aren't tricking people into giving up these ID badges with phishing emails. The underlying technology of FortiBleed is entirely automated.
It's all programmatic, yeah.
They use a custom tool written in the Go programming language called FortiGate Sniffer. But the wild part is that this tool doesn't install some noisy, easily detectable malware.
No, it just exploits a built-in diagnostic command inside the firewall's own operating system.
Right.
It is a technique we call living off the land. The command is literally just dash diagnose sniffer packet.
Which is a real command.
Exactly. Normally, a network administrator uses that command to troubleshoot connection issues by watching traffic flow in real time.
So the attackers just turn that feature on and leave it running.
Yeah, and because it's a legitimate administrative tool, the firewall's own internal security doesn't flag it as malicious. It just assumes the admin is doing some very extensive troubleshooting.
So they are just sitting there with a digital bucket, catching these clear text passwords and identity hashes as they naturally flow across 24 different network protocols.
And then they have to process all that raw data.
Right. And for that, they use an AI-native offensive security platform called CyberStrike Harvester version 1.5.
The Harvester platform acts as the sorting facility. It takes all that chaotic network traffic, extracts anything that looks like a credential or a session cookie, and then formats it for the next phase.
The cracking engine.
Yes, and they don't run this engine on a single laptop in a basement. They orchestrate the whole thing using a Telegram bot called HHHBOAFM.
I found this detail fascinating.
Right.
I mean, why use Telegram, a consumer chat app, to run an enterprise-grade computing pipeline?
Well, a few reasons. Telegram is highly encrypted. It has an incredibly robust API for building automated bots. And crucially, it easily evades corporate firewalls.
Oh, because it blends in.
Right. To a network monitor, Telegram traffic just looks like an employee messaging their friends, not a command and control server communicating with a cyber gang.
That makes sense.
So HashHabut takes the scrambled passwords, identifies the encryption algorithm, and then automatically leases and allocates cloud-based GPU clusters to run billions of mathematical guesses a second.
Until the password breaks.
Exactly.
And they run this entire pipeline with the discipline of an accounting firm. I mean, the telemetry from XenoX and SpyCloud shows that these attackers operate strictly from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Moscow time.
They treat it like a day job.
Literally. They run the extraction in exact 300-minute cycles. Every 60 seconds, the system spits out automated status reports on cracking successes and timeouts.
It just proves that we are dealing with a standardized, industrialized process. They have shifts, they have performance metrics, and they treat stolen data like a raw commodity on a conveyor belt.
Hold on, though. The report explicitly notes that this group isn't using a zero-day vulnerability.
Right.
They haven't discovered some secret, unpatchable flaw in the Fortinet software. So if they don't have a magic key to break into these firewalls, how are they getting inside to turn on the sniffer in the first place?
Ah, they are using what Arctic Wolf refers to as the credential feedback loop.
Feedback loop.
Yeah, the attackers aren't breaking the lock. They're using keys that network admins accidentally left in the door.
Oh, I see.
They take the millions of passwords they cracked yesterday and they automatically test them against new firewalls today.
So they are exploiting organizations that reuse old passwords or use weak administrative passwords.
Or that simply fail to turn on multi-factor authentication.
It is a self-sustaining engine. They use stolen access to steal configurations, which contain more passwords, which grant them access to new targets tomorrow.
And the report highlights how they ensure they never lose that access once they have it.
Right. Once they are in, they silently create fake administrator accounts to act as permanent backdoors. XenoX found one specific account pair, the username adminin and the password itadmin at 888.
Adminin. Notice the naming convention there.
Yeah, and that was planted across nearly 4,000 distinct firewalls.
Right. By naming the account admin, they are trying to visually blend in with legitimate system accounts.
Well, like a typo.
Exactly. If an overwhelmed IT manager is quickly scanning a list of 50 users, their brain might just read it as admin and skip right past it. It is psychological camouflage.
Man. So if you manage a network at a small business, this first report is the ultimate wake-up call. You are not up against a lone wolf looking for a challenge.
Not at all.
Your network is being continuously mapped and tested by an automated logistics machine. But pulling millions of low-level passwords is just the first step. A password is just a key. Attackers still need to find a highly lucrative door to unlock.
Which brings us to the exploitation phase of the supply chain. Because while the Fortibleed bots are harvesting the perimeter, other specialized groups are scanning the horizon for massive enterprise targets.
Targets that have accidentally left their core infrastructure exposed.
Exactly.
So let's talk about the newly disclosed vulnerability in Cisco's Unified Communications Manager. This is tracked as CVE-2026-2230, carrying a severe 8.6 rating.
It's a nasty one.
Yeah, it's a server-side request forgery, or SSRF, vulnerability. And a group called Diffuse Cyber has already documented active exploitation in the wild. But how does an SSRF actually function?
Well, an SSRF flaw is essentially a betrayal of trust. You can think of a corporate server like a bank teller who has full clearance to walk right into the vault.
Okay, right.
So an SSRF vulnerability happens when an attacker figures out how to hand that teller a forged instruction, and the server just doesn't properly scrutinize the request.
Because they trust the teller.
Exactly. It executes the instruction on behalf of the attacker. The vault security systems don't sound the alarm because, from their perspective, it's just the trusted teller doing the work.
So the firewall trusts the server, completely ignoring the fact that a remote attacker is pulling the strings.
Right.
In this Cisco vulnerability, the attacker uses that forged instruction to write malicious files directly into the server's underlying operating system.
And once those files are written, Cisco warns that the attacker can escalate their privileges all the way to root access, complete control over the machine.
And that is catastrophic, given the nature of the software. I mean, Cisco Unified Communications Manager is the central nervous system for enterprise telecom.
Oh, absolutely. It handles desk phones, video conferencing, internal messaging. It's the absolute core communications of a Fortune 500 company or a major hospital system.
So gaining root access there allows an attacker to intercept communications, map the internal network,
and deploy ransomware at the deepest possible level.
Right. But there is a massive caveat in the report. The specific service inside the Cisco software that contains this flaw is called WebDialer.
WebDialer.
And yep. Cisco ships the software with WebDialer disabled by default. So if the vulnerable component is turned off out of the box, why are highly sophisticated attackers bothering to actively scan for it?
Because enterprise environments are incredibly messy.
What do you mean?
Well, over the years, IT administrators will turn on legacy features like WebDialer to support an old application or maybe integrate a specific piece of hardware.
Right.
And then 5 years later, the person who turned it on leaves the company. And the feature just stays running in the background, completely forgotten.
It's a rusty side door propped open.
Exactly. The attackers know they only need to find a handful of these forgotten, misconfigured servers to gain root access to highly lucrative organizations. The payoff for finding one single oversight is immense.
So for anyone managing Cisco telecom infrastructure, the immediate action item here is to audit your environment today. You need to check your Cisco Unified serviceability settings.
Definitely.
Look specifically at your CTI feature services. If the Cisco WebDialer web service is marked as started, you have an active, easily exploitable vulnerability sitting on your network.
And the remediation is entirely straightforward. You either apply the official patches, versions 14SU6 or 15SU5, or if you cannot patch immediately, you simply turn the WebDialer service off.
Right. If you don't actively need a service, it should never be running.
Never.
Okay, so we have seen how the access extractors scrape millions of credentials with FortiBleed, and how the exploiters find those forgotten entry points on enterprise Cisco servers.
But whether they steal an identity badge or drop a malicious file, the ultimate goal is always monetization.
Always. They have to turn digital access into physical cash.
They need a financial network robust enough to launder billions of dollars, but opaque enough to avoid international banking regulators.
Right. They need a place to fence the stolen data and buy their automated tools.
Which leads us to the final, and frankly most staggering, intelligence report. The monumental U.S. Department of Justice takedown of the Huioni cloud infrastructure.
This is the financial engine that funds the chaos.
The sheer scale of the Huioni operation is difficult to overstate. We are talking about a technological backbone that facilitated a volume of illicit transactions that literally rivals the gross domestic product of small nations.
Let's break down the numbers, because they are insane. The DOJ seized cloud infrastructure tied to subsidiaries of the Cambodia-based Huion Group.
Right.
One of those subsidiaries operated in an illicit marketplace called Huion Guarantee. According to Blockchain's forensic analysis from Elliptic, before this marketplace was forced offline, it had processed over $31 billion in crypto transactions.
$31 billion.
Yeah.
To put that in historical context, that makes Huion Guarantee the largest illicit online marketplace ever recorded. It processed more than 25 times the volume of the infamous Silk Road and Alphabay dark web markets combined.
25 times. And it operated entirely through Telegram. It wasn't hidden on some complex Tor browser setup. It was functioning within a globally popular chat app.
It's brazen, but the details of what was actually bought and sold on this platform are incredibly grim.
Yeah, this bridges the gap between clean, automated code in Moscow and brutal physical reality in Southeast Asia.
Exactly. The proceeds moving through Huion were largely generated by Southeast Asian scam centers.
The scam compounds.
Yes. These are heavily guarded compounds where victims of human trafficking are imprisoned and forced to execute massive online financial frauds like, you know, pig butchering crypto scams.
The Huion marketplace provided everything these compounds needed to operate. I mean, they sold software for deepfake impersonations and voice cloning.
They offered procurement services for human trafficking.
And horrifically, merchants on the platform were openly marketing tear gas, electric batons, and electronic shackles.
Yeah.
The report notes that the compound operators literally referred to their enslaved workers as dogs, and they bought these devices to control runaway dogs.
It is the brutal physical anchor to the cybercrime economy.
It really is.
The money stolen via an exploited Cisco server or a breached FortiGate firewall ultimately flows into networks that finance human slavery. And that direct correlation is why the international response to Huawei was so unprecedented in its scope.
The takedown wasn't just a server seizure, right? It was a coordinated strike across multiple domains. The DOJ took down the cloud infrastructure hosting the marketplace backend.
Right.
Simultaneously, the U.S. Treasury sanctioned 26 entities and 9 individuals linked to the Prince Group, which is heavily tied to Huawei, classifying them as a transnational criminal organization.
And crucially, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, or FinCEN, invoked a rare regulatory tool. They labeled a related entity, HPay Service PLC, as a primary money laundering concern.
What does that actually do in practice?
What it actually does is toxify the entity to the entire global banking system. It legally prohibits any U.S. financial institution from maintaining correspondent accounts for them. Yeah, which effectively blocks them from ever touching a U.S. dollar, completely paralyzing their ability to move funds internationally.
And at the leadership level, the chairman of the Prince Group, Chen Zi, was stripped of his Cambodian citizenship, arrested, and extradited to China.
They attacked the servers, the money, and the executives all at once.
But I do have to ask about a deeply pessimistic finding from the flare threat analysis in the report.
Okay.
Huawei announced it was ceasing operations in May 2025. Yet since then, more than 30 new illicit marketplaces have popped up to fill the void.
Right, the Hydra effect.
Yeah. They're even building proprietary messaging apps to bypass Telegram entirely.
Yeah.
So is seizing $31 billion in infrastructure just spawns 30 new markets? Are international law enforcement agencies just playing an unwinnable game of global whack-a-mole?
It is really easy to look at the immediate regeneration of these markets and assume the takedown failed. And Flair's analysis rightly points out that the aggregate volume of crime hasn't immediately plummeted. However, we have to look at the underlying economics of organized crime. Sanctions and server seizures are not designed to eliminate the internet. They are designed to destroy trust.
How does seizing a server destroy trust between criminals?
Well, digital infrastructure is incredibly cheap to replace. You can spin up a new Telegram channel in 3 minutes, but trust within a criminal cartel is priceless and it's highly fragile.
Oh, okay.
When the U.S. Treasury burns 26 front companies and FinCEN blacklists a primary money laundering node, the liquidity of the cartel freezes.
Yeah.
If a criminal gang suddenly cannot access the millions of dollars they routed through HPay, they don't know if the money was seized by the FBI or if the money launderer just used the chaos as an excuse to steal the funds and run.
Oh, wow. That paranoia becomes a weapon.
Precisely. It turns the network against itself. It forces these organizations to rebuild complex, multi-layered financial routing networks from scratch.
Because the corrupt accountants and the bribed officials are burned.
Exactly. It massively increases the operational friction and the cost of doing business. Even with 30 new marketplaces available, the underlying trust required to securely move billions of dollars has been shattered.
It takes years to rebuild a frictionless laundering machine of Houdini's caliber.
Exactly.
So, synthesizing everything we've looked at today, we have really mapped the dark supply chain.
From end to end.
It starts with the 9-to-5 Russian extraction bots of Fortibleed, methodically testing weak passwords to harvest raw data from small businesses.
Right.
Then it moves to the opportunistic exploiters, scanning the internet for those forgotten, misconfigured Cisco servers to gain root access to major enterprises.
Yep.
And finally, the stolen wealth flows into the multi-billion-dollar Cambodian scam compounds, laundered through the shattered trust networks of the Huawei marketplace.
And, you know, the single most important takeaway for anyone listening to this is that this vast, intimidating criminal machinery is almost entirely dependent on our collective oversight.
Right. They do not rely on sophisticated, unpreventable magic.
No. The Fortibleed bots starve if you just enforce multi-factor authentication and rotate administrative credentials.
And the Cisco exploit completely fails if administrators simply turn off unused legacy services like WebDialer.
It's that simple. Basic security hygiene, auditing your logs, deleting fake admin accounts, keeping the perimeter updated. These are not just tedious IT chores.
These are the specific actions that throw wrenches into the gears of a $31 billion criminal enterprise.
Yeah.
You have the ability to break their supply chain right at the source.
The defense is entirely within our control, provided we treat the threat as the industrialized business that it actually is.
As we close out this deep dive, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. We have seen how cybercriminals are utilizing automated AI-driven pipelines like AHBot to treat our stolen data like a raw commodity.
Oh, right.
Their entire business model relies on the efficiency of those automated parsers.
Yeah.
So perhaps our future defense shouldn't just be about building thicker firewalls or patching servers faster.
What's the alternative?
Well, what if the next evolution of cybersecurity is about intentionally poisoning the well? What if we started flooding the internet with millions of highly realistic, dynamically generated fake credentials?
Oh, well, that's interesting.
Right. If we can't stop their automated vacuum cleaners from running, maybe it is time we start feeding them digital explosives designed to break their cracking bots from the inside out. Think about it. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.